You never have used that other one. You never have used it. You never. I'm plugged in and on. I'm plugged in and turned on.
Good morning. I just on the way over to check with your neighbor. I hadn't seen her all summer.
Well,
and I passed by here and I just thought, well, maybe somebody did. You go ahead and talk on
the phone.
You go ahead.
I'll be back.
Well, you just take your time. It's so pretty over here.
Come on.
I tell you what, I'm
just kidding. If you can stay home long enough to cut the grass and do something about the plants. I've been on the go. I've been up yonder at the hospital for 2 weeks.
You been what?
Up yonder at the hospital, staying up there. My boy got hurt terrible bad. And they thought they were going to have to amputate both of his legs, but the doctor said yesterday evening that he was so pleased with his progress. Said he was just going to lose a piece of his big toe. Oh, he got hurt bad.
Oh, that is awful. Just awful.
Two big pieces of steel fell on him and just broke him all two pieces up there. Archie at that family.
Oh.
And he's just been in the intensive care up until about 3 or 4 days ago.
Uh-huh.
It broke this leg twice, crushed his hip, and cut a great big hole in him right along there. This leg it broke and cut his leg inside here about all to the bone.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been in bad, bad shape.
Mm-hmm. You know, I get scared when I get under the car or something. I got the wheels jacked up. And you know, I know this Buster over there. He uses the jack. And then he puts himself under it.
Don't never put yourself under that car and hit just on the jack.
Yeah.
Get up. There's been more people killed like that than the colored man out of the ship got killed like that.
Hmm.
3 or 4 years ago, one of the jacks.
Yes, I just wake up and I think about getting pinned under there, you see, and nobody there to help me out. Wouldn't that be awful?
That would be awful. Don't never do it. It ain't worth it. It's just liable to take your life.
What happened to, I've been thinking about that ever since I was over here. What happened to Bernie? Was that his name, Bernie Bass? Bernie Bass.
He got drunk at a car wreck.
It's late, dark.
About 7 o'clock.
Yeah. And that highway is not
but that's just exactly what happened.
Well, now, in his time, he had been one of the nice fellows around here, hadn't he?
Yeah.
It is kind.
He was the biggest one to his own self.
Yeah.
His own self was his biggest thing. He just right.
Got worse as he got older.
That's it.
Well, now that's hard to understand, because he would get along all right. He's making money. I mean, he's making a living. It doesn't bother him. All right.
He just couldn't let his bottle alone. Miss Dodd just called me, and she said the army worms was eating them up.
Hmm. Well, I just went over and checked it, but I haven't seen it in so long. Sure, fine. I hadn't been over there in so long. I hadn't seen the swimming pool.
Well, they got a nice one.
Yeah. I haven't got the wire around it yet, I understand.
No.
Well, what's going on around your place?
Marvin's over yonder trying to save hay. And it rains on it, and he cuts it, and it rains, and he cuts it, and it rains.
It's been a dad burner hay season. I was showing Molly in life.
He's over there cutting some more today.
Just didn't intend for a fella to get anywhere this year, did they?
No, that's not it.
I had my cattle tested in March. I was so surprised. You all have yours tested.
What you mean you lost a few of them?
Well,
the Brucellos?
Yeah.
We had ours tested. And it was plumb clean. We had one cage here. The other side, we didn't have none. They sold it. Was all right. Well, they come back here and they tested twice more. We was clean. And they told us that we wouldn't be bothered with it no more. I sold 5 heifers out of this field last year sometime, and they come back here and they said I had one suspect. I had to test over, and they found 3 head of the best cows I had. They took them. The best ones I had. One cow was she was fixing to drop the calf. When the man come here to test them, Marvin told him, says, I want you to go easy with her. That cow's going to have calf. He squeezed that old chute up against her. She went right out yonder under them trees and lost the biggest, nicest calf. I had to get rid of her, and I had to get rid of 2 more heifers. And I got to test again the 14th of this month. Got to test them again.
I never heard of so much testing. They just tested once over my place, and then they come back and, well, they did it twice.
Well, you had suspects. You had, they found 3 brucellosis. Well, you have to test again twice till you're clear.
Yeah.
And I just don't know. They told us when they first come around, they said if you don't have it, you won't never have no more trouble. But I sure had 3, they said, in here.
Marvin's the best at handling animals. I've been over there on my place.
He is.
Yeah. He helped, you know, he took off some there one time. Loaded, took about that much.
Next Monday, I believe it is when we got to test again.
Yeah.
The 14th.
But I've had some over there. I've had a boy or two come out there with a vet. Why, they acted like they never saw a gentle cow, like they're all wild.
Well, it'll ruin your cows.
The way they treat them.
Yeah, it'll sure ruin them. And Miss Glisten, now she was the first one over here. She had her cows tested before we ever had to test ours. She just voluntarily had hers. And Marvin naturally fell out with that veterinarian. He told him, he said, brother, he said, if these were my cows, he said, me and you'd have trouble.
Oh, really? And I'm Marvin. Get excited.
He does when people go to being cruel to animals.
So it must have been, been something. Yes, sir. Well, I sure, he really handled my animals.
And you had three cases. Well, I had three cases this last time.
Yeah, but I didn't have as many animals as you had.
Yeah, but here in the field, how many cows you got?
I just got 20.
Well, I believe that how come me to have it, and I talked to the vet about it, and he couldn't understand it. See, they'd all been tested, and they were clear, tagged and everything. And Hogan's bought a bull. And that bull got in our pasture several times, and he finally sold a bull. And the vet said that that's where he got it.
Is that possible?
That's what he said. He said that's the only way to take it. I'll tell you how he told me. I asked him all about it, and he said, it's something just like a venereal disease is what he explained it to me.
I didn't know. I'd like to know.
Well, I didn't know it either. And he said that, now, like, I got a bull, and he goes with somebody else's cows.
The means of transportation they had for the vegetables to market at that time, you know.
It's hard to realize.
And yeah, I remember that thing. I used to ride that old truck. And they didn't run all long distance at that time, you know. Like,
yeah.
I say, they'd haul from around Evanston.
Yeah.
They used that. Well, it's gone now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That shed, same way. Macintosh, they had two or three of them. Macintosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
McIntosh was a big farming place at that time. And like I say, this, you take it, make it up of there. I've got some pictures where they used to do a lot of farming, and why, they used to have some big crops.
Now that's interesting, because you see, I don't know anything about that part of,
yeah,
of it. About what time was
that? That was way back in about 20.
In the 20s.
Two or three.
In the 20s.
Four and five, long enough. Whenever I was a kid, say about 8 years old,
mm-hmm,
my grandmother bought me a little old ukulele. And I liked to play that thing, you know, and I'd sing a little bit, you know. And back those days on Saturday afternoon, that little town was full of people. And they had two or three little dance halls up there at the end of town, you know, and
uh-huh,
and they had an old thing called a Chautauqua used to come through there, and the old Silas Green shows, and all kind of circuses used to come through there, you know, back in the older days, you know.
Yeah.
And on Saturday afternoon, all the farmers, every one of them come in town and move horses and wagons, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Hit them old horses behind those stores, you know, and
that's
they'd
right,
have a big time.
Yeah.
And I'd take that old ukulele and get out there on the street, you know, and play a little tune, sing a little bit, you know, and they'd give me a penny or a nickel, you know, and I'd make 50, 75 cents on Saturday afternoon. That's big money then.
Sure.
Why, you could take 75 cents and live a month. You could. And I remember this is good. I used to go around to my aunt that lived around there in the old Watkins house. And she didn't give a hoot about hearing that old ukulele and this thing, but she'd always give me a dime. Man, that dime was like a dollar now.
Yeah,
it is. And I wasn't ashamed, man. I'd just get down and I'd have beaten that thing and I'd have playing it, you know, just going it down. They get ticked out of me. I'd trying to make that dime.
And singing?
Yeah.
By yourself?
Yeah. And then my brother, that's how he used to go with me. He'd try to buck dance, you know. He'd get up there and try to dance a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
They'd throw money out there, you know, on the sidewalk, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think we used to do that a long time ago.
on Saturday.
You never see that anymore. Then I got shining shoes, you know. I'll never forget as long as I live. Old Albert Zetrow, you know him?
I know who he is.
Yeah. Old Albert come here one day and he had a pair of old boots on. And he'd give me 20 cents for shining them old boots.
God bless.
And you know, you take now, you couldn't shine a pair of boots for less than a dollar. You know, as much territory as you got to cover. And back then, that's what we'd get. 20 cents for shining them boots.
Are you glad to get that one?
Man, I'm telling you. And I tell you who would run the barbershop, old Mac Weaver.
Yeah.
Sure was. Old Mac was running that barbershop up there, you know. He had two chairs and two pool rooms in the back room. And a big fur business on the side. Mac was making money at that time. Did he tell you about that fur business he was in?
No.
He ever tell you? Man, he was in the fur business good at one time, man.
You mean pelts and all that?
Yeah.
Around here?
Mm-hmm. You're right up there on the right-hand side of Myers' store, where the red and white store is.
Yeah.
Well, that right-hand door, they had a partition in there. Mm-hmm. And he had a fur business in there. In other words, now I'm not talking about minks or stoves. I'm talking about old coon hides.
Yeah.
And they'd kill these little coons and skin them, you know, and put them on those boards, you know, for them to dry, you know?
Yeah.
And then they'd make some kind of a thing to go around your neck, you know.
Yeah.
And they, I don't think he'd send those things up the country somewhere or another. Otter hides.
Mm-hmm. Otter, uh-huh.
Otter. And I don't know what kind of hides he did buy. Rabbit hides. He'd buy them, you know, from people. Then he'd resell them, you know. Ship them off. And old Mac used to do pretty good up there. Old Mac had a brand new Ford. I used to go hunting with him, you know. I told you before about going hunting. Don't you remember?
No.
About
you, just horn? You just made that story you made up on him.
That story I made up on about the old horn business, you know, made
you
him
never,
so mad.
Yeah, you never
but
told
me. I used to drive his old car, you know, and he had his old horn. He'd go through the woods and blow up for the old dogs, you know, and I'd follow him up, you know. Stay out there all night. I wouldn't do it again for nothing.
You did?
Oh,
man.
Boy, be cool.
Yeah.
Pardon?
Yeah.
And, but I wouldn't do it again.
Are you a fox hunting?
Fox hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to make old Mac mad, you just tell him the old dog like to run a rabbit.
Yeah.
Man, he didn't like that. Them dogs ain't hunting no fox like to run a rabbit. He said, my dog don't hunt rabbits. Boy, he get mad with you right now.
Well, you would you stay in one place?
No.
You'd keep moving?
Keep moving.
So you couldn't build a fire?
Oh, yeah, we'd stop once in a while building a fire.
You know, Buster, I have never understood how you went fox hunting in this kind of country when you got fences. Did you have fences?
Didn't have fences back then.
Oh.
No fence law came in effect in what?
30s.
In the 30s.
You drive your truck?
You go anywhere you want to.
And then after the 30s, you still wouldn't have many fences.
Not too many. That's right.
Just drive across people's
place? We used to, yeah, people didn't care back those days.
They paid attention to it.
Paid no attention to it, no. Well, they didn't, I don't know, like I say, it wasn't fenced up. And most of it was just forest, you know, and they didn't care.
Yeah.
And you take out west of town there, you do a lot of hunting out there around, you know where Davis lives at, the telephone man?
Yeah.
Man, that used to be the best hunting back there you ever seen in your life.
Yeah.
And once in a while, everybody in town would go out there and they'd turn a fox loose. And have a big chase, you know. Yeah. And I remember one night they went out there and turned the old fox loose, and that fox made a circle. He must have run 7-8 miles in a circle, and he come back and went up a tree almost where they turned him loose at.
And we did what?
Went up a tree almost.
A fox?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The fox is a leaning tree. A fox will grow up a leaning tree. Yes, sir.
Busted. I never knew that.
And they shot the old fox up there and he jumped out and them dogs grabbed him. Yeah, fox will grow up a leaning tree. They sure will. They got claws, you know. They can't go up a tree that's sticking straight up.
Yeah.
The one that's leaning. They'll run up it to get away from them dogs, you know.
Yeah.
And you've been out with Mac Weaver a long time.
Plenty of times when I was young.
Yeah. How old were you?
I don't know, maybe 10 years old.
Oh, that young?
Yeah, 12.
Well, somehow or other, I got the idea that you were sort of dapper when you growed up. You just wore them sports shoes and stayed on the concrete.
Well, I did later on. After I learned better. Keep going, huh? Losing all my sleep.
Yeah. I see.
Yeah, later on I did.
And you started living the good life.
Oh,
right?
Boy.
When you was 8 and 12, I just...
Yeah. Them was the good old days, though.
You know, Micanopy is so interesting because, well, isn't it about the oldest place next to St. Augustine? You got a lot of things there in Micanopy.
That's right. All the old homes, you know, they all burned down. There used to be a lot of big old fine homes there. Matter of fact, we had one. Thing called a fine burn down.
Oh, really?
It was big as this house here. It had shingles on it, you know. And it used to get that old green growth on top of it, you know, you've seen it. And one day, my brother was out there in the yard, we had a fire going, burning some trash, and a spark went up and caught that thing off. It had been fire one or two times before that.
Yeah.
They put it out, but that time they didn't put it out.
Yeah. You just got to be there at the right time.
Yes, sirree.
Yeah.
I remember Daddy went there one time, knocked one of them shingles off, it was on fire, and they went out on the ground, and that stopped it. But that last time, it... Now, if we had that old truck about there now, we could put it out.
Yeah.
We sure did miss that old home, too. And we used to have a lot of orange trees and nut trees around there, you know. But after that fire kind of ruined them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then that, on back in the backside of that field, they got kind of old age killed them. They just got too old to bear, and after a while, they just died.
Well, Buster, when was your first experience with the Ku Klux, like you, the Klan, when you, like you were talking about the other day, yesterday? Yeah,
they had a Klan there in 46, right after I come out of the Army.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Did it open?
Yeah.
Hmm.
What was the agitators about then? 46.
Well, the main thing that they was trying to do at that particular time was trying to get membership and dues. That's the main objective. They wanted money.
Mm-hmm.
They wasn't trying to do anything in particular. But well, they did say something down there one night. What was that they were saying? They were saying something about... I know this guy that was from McClenny, he was kind of the big dog, you know. He's a, what do you call it, the dragon?
So I know.
He was saying something about, he went over to his grandmother's over there and said this big fat nigger woman come bouncing in the house there and sit down in the front room just like she was born and raised there, like she was supposed to be there. And you know, back in those days, they didn't particularly like that, you know, too much.
Mm.
Because now they don't pay too much attention to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But back in those days, you know, they did. They kind of objected to it.
Yeah.
They resented it just a little bit, you know.
Oh, yeah. Now, then they... Is burning crosses all they could do?
Yeah.
That's all they do.
Yeah, like I said, like I told you yesterday, there's a lot of people around there living together that wasn't married, you know, and they... Go to their house and tell them that if you're going to live together, you better get married.
Oh.
And they'd put a cross in the yard and burn it.
Oh.
See?
Now, one of these fellas.
That meant for them to straighten out, fly right.
One of these fellas, bootlegger, and they also living with a little girl from Arnold
Lake. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Old Jim Eve can tell you about it, too.
Yeah.
They told her, said, we'll give you 24 hours to get out of town. She said, oh, I need two. She was scared, you know.
Yeah.
And she left. And she lived with this old guy, old Frank Hines down there. Everybody knew it.
And they bootlegging too.
Yeah.
Well, now, he knew who they was.
The Ku Klux?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They didn't go up disguised or anything.
Most of them wore robes. But he could tell who was talking. He knew their voice. Sure,
talking.
He knew who they were.
Was he scared?
Nah. Yeah, he wasn't scared.
He'd have too much business with them.
Yeah.
All of them.
Well, you think they want me to join a Ku Klux Klan, but I wouldn't do it. Because, and the reason I didn't was, old Henry Brown, do you know him?
I know who he is.
Old Henry. He come up there and asked me.
Oh, yes, I know Henry Brown.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him.
Yeah, he worked that snake pit down there, you know.
Yes.
He used to operate that place.
Yeah.
And he come up there to me one day and wanted to know if I wanted to join the Ku Klux Klan. That's something I don't care about. I said, I don't join anything. Which I didn't never believe in joining anything, because the very time I should be there, I'd be somewhere else. Even when they moved the veterans to foreign wars, I'd make another to Gainesville. I didn't join up there. Because every time they had a meeting in Megan, I couldn't go. And that volunteer fire department, I belong to that. Well, I don't belong to it. I do more than anybody in town for it. I drive the old truck and help them everywhere I can. But I don't never go to those meetings. I just can't go to a meeting. I work till dark. So old Henry says, we want you to join this thing. I said, what's it cost? He said, $15. That's for a membership, you know?
Uh-huh.
I said, well, Henry, I says, I ain't got $15. He said, I'll loan you $15. I said, I don't want to borrow no $15. And so the next day I was telling his brother, I said, well, now, Henry wants me to go down there and join the Ku Klux Klan. His brother, he talked him into joining it too, you know. And I said, he's trying to make like he's so nice. I said, what about this old naked woman he's always going out here to see? And she invites him in and gives him coffee. And every time you go by there, you see the tail end of the old car sticking out around the house. He said, who's that? I remember the name, but I can't think of it now. And I told him, he said, I believe I have seen that car. I thought, you ought to see it out there. I said, you're driving this truck, log truck for him. And that's one reason I didn't want to join it. I had too much, what do you call it? People that was unfaithful. You know, they were saying one thing, like some of these preachers do, you know, they're saying one thing and doing something else. They don't say, do as I do, they say, do as I say do.
Mm-hmm.
See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought to myself, yeah, that whole thing filled up with people just like him.
Yeah.
He's trying to tell me to do something right, and I said, yeah, he's out here doing the wrong thing himself. See what I mean? So I lost confidence in it right there.
So they weren't just agitating against any particular group?
No.
I didn't know the
Ku Klux Klan was a bunch of people that was trying to make people do right. That's what they was actually doing.
Oh.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
As you first.
I never did see them beat nobody. Of course, in some places they might have.
Yeah.
They never did around there. They'd go to people and talk to them. They'd take somebody out of the group and send them up there and tell them what they wanted to do. And it was always something good.
Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Oh, and they weren't just trying to, it wasn't racial or anything like that at that time.
Well, a little bit.
Yeah.
In case some colored fellow go uptown on Saturday afternoon,
yeah,
and show himself and
yeah,
get up amongst the white people there and block the sidewalk and get drunk, they'd go tell him, say, now don't let that happen no more. The dude's gonna run you out of town.
Mm-hmm.
And he wouldn't do it no more either.
Mm-hmm.
But they.
Oh, they would respect that.
They would respect that.
They would remember that.
But the people that writes up this stuff about the Ku Klux Klan seem to have the idea that it was racial, which it was not.
Well, now let me tell you, Buster. I brought up this country, or one just like it. I never had any contacts with the Klan. I reckon I didn't stay home enough. But what you telling me is brand new to me. I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
I thought all they did was
harass people.
Harass.
Agitate.
Yeah.
No, sir. No, just the opposite. Just the opposite.
Yeah.
Yeah, you take back then, it was against the law to sell wildcat liquor. And some of those, maybe once in a while you'd find a person that would go spend all his money for liquor and get drunk and lose all his money, and his family wouldn't have nothing to do.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing to eat. The Ku Klux Klan never would get together and take up a collection and give that family enough money to buy something to eat, but they'd also go down there and burn across the yard and scare them.
Oh.
And usually that worked out pretty good, too. Now, I'm just telling you what they used to tell me from the long time ago before my time. Well, I don't know, I was a kid then, but I kind of remember it. But the Ku Klux Klan in 1946, after the war was over, when they tried to organize one there and make it over, were different kind of people from what it was whenever I was a kid.
How would it differ then?
Well, this last time, the main thing I said, well, they was interested in money, just like the NAACP is.
Yeah.
That's the only thing they studying about is money. And these people ain't got sense enough to know it. Why, half the colored people making up it, sending them donations, don't know what it's all about.
I didn't know that.
And if white people just like colored people, just gathering up that old money and spend it going and coming. They don't know, keep no records of where that money's going or nothing. Sure they do. There's plenty of them, card-carrying members right there making up it, sends a dollar a month. Sure it is. They don't know where that money's going. Well, those big shots are taking that money and spending it. You know what I mean? They're getting paid to have these good jobs, you know.
Well, they've got to be important.
Yes, sir. And they got to do something once in a while to make it look big, you know. It's just a job like anybody else has got. Make them think they're doing something, you know. Just like when I was over in Ireland one time. We used to have an old guy over there, that was the biggest guy I've ever seen in my life. I used to tell him, I said, come here to me. Man, I haven't got time right now, so I got to go over here and do something. And he was just as busy as a bee going from place to place doing nothing, which he could have been doing something possible if he just wanted to, you know. And it wasn't doing helping in him, but wearing him out, you know. And one day he said he had to go across the camp there, you know. He had a little army camp over in a little place called Moneymore. That's in Ireland, you know, not doing World War II.
Called what?
Moneymore. That's the name of the little town. And he was in a big hurry to go across over there, and I followed him. And you know, he went over there and got in the empty barracks and was sitting down smoking whenever I walked in there. But he was, like I said, he just said, big as he could be, and that's the way it is, these organizations like I was talking about just now. Somebody making out there, he said, big as they can be, and they ain't doing nothing.
Yeah.
Except creating trouble.
Protesting.
Protesting.
Nothing
demonstrating.
Suits. Nothing suits them.
No. Nothing ever will. I heard a guy say last night. I was telling him what me and you were talking about, and he said, he gave me a good point. I don't know what it was now. But he said, just like I told you, though, you never heard of the NAACP giving anybody any money, or sending anybody through school, or giving them any kind of money as far as donation concerned. They keep it all for themselves, don't they?
Yeah. As far as I've ever heard.
Yes, I've never heard of them donating anything to anybody, have you?
No.
Never have. Like I said, they keep it for themselves. And there's just many white people there, there's colored people there drawing that money. Just as this, considered a job, you know.
And after 46, you think the Klan changed?
I think it did.
They was interested in the dues.
There's a different type of people. They were just interested in the dues more than anything else. Yeah, whenever they was in that field, they had no big field out there, you know, that night, and they was all talking. They had a lot of cars in there. And that's the main thing they were thinking about, getting that money.
What was that, Harry Buster?
The field?
Yeah. Well, they had a big meeting?
They had a big meeting. They had a great big old semi, you know, and they made a platform out of it. They had a microphone up there, you know. Everything.
Now, that was way back.
In 46. You mean the field?
Yeah.
No, right there at Gene Crown.
I mean, it was back in 46.
Yeah.
And they was having a big meeting and trying to get the word around.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of people come out of Gamble down there. All around.
Oh, it wasn't just local, it was all
No, it was people out of Stark, J. Jacksonville. Some of them old Ku Klux up there was going to try to organize it, you know. They was used to it.
I see.
One over out of McClenny. They used to live in Macon, nobody's moved away, but he lived in McClenny at that time, you know. And he's a preacher now.
Yeah.
That guy is. Doing good, good. And like I say, he was just in that. Just,
mm-hmm.
Just get some money. Just for a job, that's all it was. Well, that's where everything you see this day and time, something to make money out of, isn't it? If ain't no money, there ain't going to be no success at all.
Well, that's a great appeal.
That's the first thing the church tells you when you go, you know. They say, now I hate to do this, but we got to pass around this collection plate. And they'll pass that thing around, you know, if you're not careful, that preacher will step up there and get on his hands and knees and say, now, you know, you got to, what do you call it? When you make a pledge, you know, tithe. You got to tithe, you know.
Yeah.
And say, don't put in a little amount. Say, put in as much as you can.
Yeah.
Don't they want to tell you that? You know, we had a...
If the preacher don't tell you, they have a men's day. And then you see the men, the stewards, they'll tell you.
Yeah. Well, they had a meeting down there one night at the Methodist Church, and I went down there, and just happened so I went there on the wrong night. Things start on Sunday, and I waited until Wednesday night to go down there. And by George, that was the very night they was preaching on tithing, you know.
Yeah.
I said, oh my goodness, don't tell me I got hit the wrong time. I want to hear him preach on something else. And that old guy got up there, and he wasn't from Minneapolis, he was from, I believe, North Carolina. I know he was. And he was telling about that everybody ought to pledge, you know, to give so much of their earnings, you know. I think it's 10%, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's 10%.
Usually 10%.
Well, that's a lot of money, 10% of your earnings, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And just like I told the preacher there one day, you remember Carmack Morris? I told him one day, I said, you know, I think everybody ought to give 10%. Or maybe 15. He said, I think so. You know how you talk, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, well, I do too. And I said, the more money they got, I said, the more they ought to give. And I said, I'm thinking about jumping in there and doing my part. I said, by the way, I said, how much do you give? He looked at me kind of funny and he didn't answer that, you know. I said, you give 10% of what you make back to the church? He said, why don't talk about something else? Sure did. But I asked him, you know, he gets a salary.
Uh-huh.
He gets a salary, a preacher does. And I asked him, I said, now you get a salary. I said, do you put back in the church 10% of your salary what you make? And he wouldn't answer that, you know?
Buster, I used to pass by there, and you'd be under a car, and I every now and then I'd see him, Preacher Carmack Morris, squatting down there talking to you under that car.
You would?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What'd he do, catch you under there where you couldn't get loose?
Well, whenever I'm laying down, I do my best talking. Let's put it that way. I can do my best talking laying, see?
You and Morris used to have some talk.
Yeah. Well, I was always frank with him, see?
Yeah.
I didn't beat around the bush, and he'd always ask me a lot of questions.
You could talk out to a fellow like that.
Yeah, he was a big talker himself, you know. He always straight to the point, and I shot straight from the shoulder, too, you know, and I'd tell him just what I thought like I did about that tithing, you know. Like I asked him, I said, do you give 10% of what you make back to the church?
Yeah.
And then I asked him one day, he says, what was that he told me? Well, you know, one day he come by and he wanted some, that's the other preacher, Underwood. He come away one day and he says, Buster says, we missed you at church. I said, well, I miss you too. Yesterday. He said, well, it's not my business, but where was you at yesterday? And I said, I was at Daytona Beach. I said, we went down there, spent Saturday and Sunday. He said, "Don't you think you'd be better off if you was in church?" I said, "I was in church." And which I was, you know. And you that band shell, you ever been in that band shell down there?
Yeah.
Well, in that band shell, they have on services sometime on Sunday night. And they had a choir from Atlanta, Georgia down there that they announced it on Saturday night. They were going to have them down there on Sunday night. And I said, "Well, I'd like to hear that." And boy, they were good, too. They sang some good hymns, you know. And anyway, I went down there and told my wife, I said, "Let's go down there and listen to it." So we did. And they preached. I'll never forget as long as I live. That guy was from, where's he from? Missouri. And he was telling about the formation of the clouds in the state of Florida here, that he had never seen them boil up like they do here, and those be just as white as snow. But you've seen them.
Oh, yeah.
And it said, "I got all kind of designs of animals, or ships, or whales, or just anything you want to look at up there. You could make something out of it." And I had never thought about that until he preached about that, you know. And I told him, I said, "Well, I was down there." He said, "That's not doing us any good." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well," he said, "you're supposed to go to your own church." I don't feel that way about it. I feel like if you're going to church down there, you're doing just as good as if you're going to church and making up. What difference does it make? As long as you're going. You know what y'all say? And, but anyway.
That's not the way they figure.
I know. So he says, Russell says, "That's not right. So you're a bad boy." I said, "I know that." I said, "It's got to be a black sheep in every family." I said, "I guess it's me." He said, "Well, you're a bad boy." Turn around, walked on off. The next day he come back, he had a little car, it had no brakes on it, you know. And he said, "You know, I ain't got no brakes." I said, "That's bad." He said, "Would you look at it?" And I said, "Yeah, I looked at it, and it had no brake fluid." So I filled the thing full of fluid, you know, I pumped all the air out of it, you know, and he got through, you know. He said, "How much owe you?" I said, "Oh, nothing." He said, "You know, Buster, you're a good man." I said, "That ain't what you said yesterday." I tell you that before, don't you remember?
Yeah,
yeah, that ain't what you said yesterday.
That's all right, that's good. That's a good question.
Just depends on whether you do something to somebody.
I know it. Even for a preacher. Your dad ain't no preacher, is he?
No.
Buster, this hand buster some more of that fool he gave.
You know, I don't care. That's good. I appreciate it.
Let me tell you, Buster. I come home yesterday,
yeah.
You know, after I talked to you about that chimney pot up there. But when I looked up there, that old black smoke was just going on up.
Yeah.
Well, after you come back a while ago, after I come home yesterday, I went out there and looked at it. And it had cleared off. This cloud had cleared off. And I could still see a little of it going out. Or it could have been the heat. You know, the heat makes waves and looks like it a little bit. But it wasn't near as much as it was. But it seems to me sometimes it just seems to come right down there where I am. Where I breathe it. That's why I was interested. I thought I just put it in that old stove.
Well, you know, I read something the other day about that. It was in last night's paper. Did you see it?
No.
It said in cloudy weather that I believe it's over where the city owns that someplace there. You
that,
saw it, didn't
that
you?
That electricity.
Yeah,
the
and they were using oil for electricity, you know, wasn't it? And it had a tendency to make the smoke real thick, you know, and it couldn't go up in the air on kind of cloudy weather, you know. And whenever the air's cold up there, it don't go up, you know, like it should either. And that you could smell it on the ground. But, you know, I've noticed a lot of fireplaces that the smoke would go up in the air on certain days, especially in the wintertime, you know, and then all of a sudden it starts swooping back down toward the ground. You've seen that.
Yeah.
And I don't know what makes it do it unless the air is thick up there. It could be in cold weather, you know. It keeps it from rising like it should, you know. Of course, back in the olden days, they always had an old saying or something like that. If they saw the smoke coming down through the ground, they'd tell you it's going to be cold next week or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like old Henry Brown one day. He says, whenever you see all the cows laying on the ground, it meant something. I forgot what he said it meant now. So when you ever see them all laying down,
yeah.
He said, they don't lay down all the time. They don't either,
mm-hmm.
Do they?
No.
He said, whenever you see all the cows laying down, it's going to rain or something or other. I meant to ask old Henry about that not very long ago when I saw him and didn't do it.
Well, what, does he still come around?
Yeah.
I never seen him.
He was living down at Carr's Lake, you know. You know, he left his wife.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
What was that? What happened?
Well, she got disabled, you know. She's real old. She's a whole lot older than he is, you know.
Yeah.
And she always started staying with her son. And the son and daughter's taken care of because they could do it whole easier than he could, you know. He was all working. And he got to run around some woman, you know.
Oh.
Called a Dutch. Excuse me. That snake pit, you know. See, he was working on it at that time.
Uh-huh.
And whenever he was in the logging business, you know, he'd hand her his pocketbook and tell us, well, buy what you want.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's the biggest fool I've ever seen in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she finally broke him.
Yeah.
Well, he had a Pontiac car and he had a, what you call a skidder. He called it hula. You know, they pull the logs out in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Then they had a frog, gets a little old short dinky thing, like a tractor, you know.
Yeah.
And he had two trucks running. He kept on and finally he didn't have nothing. And she stayed with him till he about off and on. Of course she stayed off and on, you know, she'd leave me once in a while. And then she left here about a month and a half ago. He carried her up in Georgia, Pearson, Georgia. Because he come out of the garage that day, he went up there and said he's going to leave her up there a couple of days. And after she stayed up there, she went to find her a new boyfriend. She never did come back. She sure didn't. But he acts like he's mighty worried here lately.
Well, Henry's not as well off as he was.
No. No, he don't get anything now but just a check, you know, from the Social Security.
Yeah.
And that don't amount to a very little.
That's not very. Yeah.
No, that don't amount to nothing.
She has to hire her out.
He does. <That ain't.
laughs>
And but I think that she's kind of anxious to get away from him anyway, because like I say, he's a whole lot older than she is.
Buster, this you figure that around in here, this smoke not gonna bother us.
Heck no, it ain't gonna bother you. Well, the only place the smoke's gonna bother you is in a big city, but it's factories. I was in Sheffield, England one time. Now, you talking about a smog, and in London, too. Now, they got some smog there. In London, I seen the days you'd have to drive around there with your hair, fog lights on. In the middle of the day, 12 o'clock in the day. That's right. That smoke in those factories, you know, goes up, and it's foggy. And the smoke, the fog seemed to be thicker then the smoke because it's damp a little bit. And then that smoke kind of flows to the ground just a little bit.
Yeah.
And a lot of people die over there, you know, from that smog. Yeah, it kind of stops up the respiratory organs, you know, and they just like smoking cigarettes, smoking up, and that's probably going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And it stops their lungs up, you know, that's why they, you know, especially old people, you know, they'll get some kind of pneumonia and die.
But now, Buster, just suppose that everybody did have a thing like this that we've got out there. What, is there anything you could do to just filter it out that you know about?
I don't know of a thing to filter. They're putting these smog devices on automobiles now.
Yeah.
And they're helping. They're doing good.
Yeah.
But I have no idea if they'll ever put anything on top of a house that'll help it.
Well, you haven't got any of those smog devices for an auto.
No.
You know,
they're not. Your car, like your cars, now they're not equipped for that sort of thing. Your manifolds aren't. These new cars got holes drilled in the side of them for those things screw in there, you know.
Yeah.
And it filters that stuff.
Check on
those. I tell you, they filter that smoke and cut it down to a certain extent, but I still say that there's carbon monoxide going on there. It's got to. Even though it's filled out and there's no smoke, there's still carbon monoxide.
Just cuts it down.
Just cuts it down and makes you think you're not getting anything. But I tell you the worst thing in the world. Now, smoke stack on top of a house means nothing. That's just immaterial as far as health is concerned. That stuff's already up above the ground and it goes on up in the air. And it might be one day out of a year that would come back down to the ground and you'd breathe just a little bit of it. which wouldn't last long. Mm-hmm. But what about a highway like 75 out here, where you're following these semis, and all that smoke's coming just boiling out of those things? I mean, just buku of it. And that flow of traffic, you're falling right in the path of all those vehicles, and every one of them shooting out carbon monoxide. Every one of them. Now that's where there's danger,
right,
as far as I'm concerned. Right there.
That's right scary, ain't it?
Why, you know what I did? Where was I? Oh, I'll tell you where it was. Have you ever crossed that big old orange grove, the other side of Leesburg, between there and Little Haven?
Yeah.
You ever been?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, you don't see nothing but orange trees, just as far as your naked eye can look. Every direction. Just hills of nothing but orange trees. Well, I was in there one day, and I was coming back from Little Haven. We've been down there from the old Gary Moore's down there. And we went down there to have a program on that Silver Lake down there, you know. And I was like old Gary, him little Darwood, you know, was always on that program, you know, years back, some few years ago, you know. And we went down there and we started coming back across that thing. And it was raining. And I got behind those semi. And that semi didn't have the stacks up real high. It's one of the older models, and they had this stack. That thing wasn't that high above the trailer. And boy, that thing was putting out black soot. I'm telling you, that thing was really putting it out. And it wasn't going up in the air either, on account of the rain. Yeah, the atmosphere was damp up there. And boy, that thing's coming back on my old windshield. And you know, I got so I couldn't hardly even see. And I just had to either go around him or drop back. So I just dropped back and I went to a filling station up there. This old guy said, pour some Coca-Cola on it. Said, it'll clean it off. So I did. I sprayed a little Coca-Cola on that thing. Got a cigarette out and I had some in the glove compartment. I didn't smoke very much, just once in a while. I took that tobacco and rubbed on it and got that oil off of that. But now that oil, breathing that stuff, I'm telling you, it'd kill you, I believe. That old diesel.
Makes you feel sick if
you're, sure it does.
If you're riding behind one of those big trucks.
That's right. And you take on 75 out there, there'll be 8 or 10 of those things ahead of you running. And, well, that's terrific, Pat. That thing puts out all that old fumes and stuff. And that's what I say, that's where your danger is right there. Because this thing up here is so high. And there's not much danger smoke coming down, because you know yourself, smoke's going up, it ain't going to come down unless there's a reason.
Ordinarily,
it just rises,
just,
you know.
Just keep going on
keeps
up.
Keeps on going on up to get some clouds.
And just going up in space?
On up in space.
So we wouldn't have to worry about it?
No, you ain't got to worry about it. Of course, now it could go up there and formate into a cloud and rain, and you might get a little bit of that stuff down, but that wouldn't amount to nothing. Wouldn't amount to a thing.
Right.
It wouldn't be like fallout, you know. You know, that's where you get a lot of fallout through the rain, you know that?
Yeah.
Radiation.
Yeah.
You take, shoot them a bomb, them bombs, you know.
Yeah.
And it goes up and gets in those clouds, and that cloud liable to go several hundred miles, and it's liable to rain and rain down radiation, but you'd never know it.
No.
But it's possible. Potential, you know.
Yeah.
It could do it, you know. But as far as this smoke is concerned, it wouldn't mean nothing. You know what I mean? There's nothing there that would kill you like.
But now up at that boiler up there in Gainesville, there's enough of that to mean something.
Yeah.
Like you said in
the
paper.
Yeah. On a damp day, it would have some effect on you.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about it is here, it don't last but a day or 2 days. Way up in these northern states where it's real cold, it'll last for months.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
It'll last for months.
Yeah.
And that does create a danger there. Last all winter.
Yeah.
You know, like I say, a sheriff here in England, when I was over there one time, that whole town, every building in that thing was just as black as your hat. It was black.
Oh.
And there's some smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Smoke from those factories. And it couldn't rise on account of the, see, you take in England and Ireland, Scotland, well, not Scotland so bad, but especially Ireland and England, those are small countries, you know. And it's always damp, you know, and rainy, during wintertime especially. And like I say, that they have those factories around there, and that smoke just can't get up off of there, too high up off the ground, you know. Like I say, it wants to come back down. You know, so much of it will go up, and then it'll kind of disperse, and that's why it'll start flowing back down towards the earth, because it's warmer down towards the earth than it is up high. See? That's what
but
I think.
I never thought about that, but we used to talk about that. You brought that up yesterday. You know, you just dodged around over this whole country.
Yeah.
Now, yesterday, I stopped by your place there. And, of course, I saw your doors closed, and I went on down there, and I just happened to see you. You just happened to come out that time when I got there, out of that road down to the mill.
Yeah, I've been down there and see about a car.
In the pickup truck.
And yes, you went to Gainesville. See about some things.
Yeah.
Well, last Sunday I was down at Yankeetown, and that's when I saw smog for the first time I've ever seen it in my life in Florida. I've never seen smog in my life in Florida until Sunday.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, you ever seen smog?
In Jacksonville.
Yeah, there's plenty of it in Jacksonville. And it had a cloud all over English down there. Did you know that? And whenever we come, let's see, 5 miles this side of it, well, why, I said, it's cloudy. I said, no, that's not cloudy, that's smog. And whenever, you could tell it was smog, you know. And it's from them old big pipes down there, Florida Power Corporation, planting, they got them big stacks down there. And that stuff was going up and was just staying up. It wasn't down low on the ground though, because I noticed out on the bay there, where Gulfport is, you know,
mm-hmm.
that my wife kept saying, there's something on fire. And I said, no, there ain't nothing on fire around here. I don't smell no smoke. I said, that's some kind of a, the air's kind of dense or something or other in those pockets, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't realize at that time it was smog until we started to leave out of there. And way on about a mile or two down the road, I could see sunshine. See? And I said, that ain't a thing about smog. We got talking about it, you know. And
how thick was it?
It wasn't very thick.
A couple of miles?
No, more than that. You mean the area that it covered?
Yeah.
That thing covered about a 10-mile area there, I believe.
Oh, man.
Like I say, the most I've ever seen, but it was up high. It wasn't low. And I believe that salt air was blowing in off of that gulf, and that was created. I've been down there before the winter time, it wasn't that way.
Yeah.
That's the first time I've ever seen smog down there.
What color was it?
White. Whitish gray.
Is that right?
Sometimes it's kind of yellow.
This wasn't yellow though. Didn't have no yellow. It was kind of a whitish gray. Like I say, it wasn't too thick, you know. Now, if it was real thick, it would be kind of yellow. They tell me California is the worst place in the world for smog. But Russ Kellen said, isn't it?
Pretty thick.
I bet it is too. Because see, there's always on that coast there, you know, that salt air, like I say, it's blowing in, and it keeps that smoke from rising.
I think New York is worse.
It is.
It's a mess there. It's
right. Well, I stayed in New York, let's see, I didn't stay there very long, about 2 months. In October, back in 42. And those buildings there, you know, they're all black. Black and gray. Every one of them, aren't they? You don't see any white buildings in New York, except the, what was it? The, and you building they put up, huh?
United Nations.
The United Nations building. And it didn't stay that way very long, I have no idea. You know, it finally turned too. Yeah. But we ain't got no problem down here as far as polluted air is concerned. I ain't worried about it a minute. I read a piece in the paper not very long ago, said in 1991, that people have to go around a sack over their head. Did you read that?
Yeah.
I don't believe that.
Buxton, you
that,
see...
Go ahead.
Hmm?
Go ahead.
What it does, if it gets so thick up New York, it'll start spreading out. Now, just like that Palatka stuff. You see, when the wind's over there, you don't get the smog from Palatka, but you get that odor.
You get that odor? You do?
All the way over here. Did every time the wind's in the east, I can't...
Did you
know
I even smell that stuff all the way over to Inverness Sunday? The wind was in the right direction, you know, and it was blowing low, and it was kind of on the ground, I guess, just rolling along. And boy, you can smell it all the way down to the end of that.
Well, so what happened, we were talking yesterday, what happened to Jim? Jim Means. He just stalled out there.
You mean out at the gate?
Yeah.
He just stalled it down.
And he won't have anything to do with making open it, and he won't speak to you unless he stalled.
Well, I'll tell you what he did do. He did come back through town the other day and throw up his hand.
Oh, did he?
But he didn't stop. He just threw up his hand and went on.
Oh, did he?
Yes.
And he come through town?
He come through town. For what reason, I don't know.
Yeah. Just to throw up his hand?
Well, no. He might have been going out. No, he couldn't be going to the post office, but he's got a box out there, I believe. He's on the roof.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he's... Maybe he just wanted to come through town.
I
you know, there's a lot of people that come through town just for curiosity.
Yeah,
a lot of people. A lot of Yankees come through here, and that's why they'll see that sign making up there, and they'll go through there just see what it looks like, you know. And they'll come on out, hit the highway, and go. Just curiosity, just gonna see what the little place looks like, you know.
Yeah, look, she don't know what Jim Means, and she never saw anybody like that. Now, Jim was brought up in this country.
Yeah,
and at one time, you see, he just sort of, well, you know, the country sort of belonged to him. He just played ball and drove cars and did all those things. But
he did.
Now, seems like everything goes against him. And ever since he got the contract over there to haul the garbage at Micanopy,
mm-hmm.
and he hadn't had it long. And they had that session, and they voted it out, give the contract to somebody else because they underbid him by $2 or $3.
Yeah, they did that on purpose. They knew just exactly how much to bid under him, because they knew what he was getting, see?
Yeah.
And this man and his wife, they figured they could haul it cheaper than Jim could, because Jim would have to hire somebody to help him, and this other bunch didn't, see?
No, this other bunch used, this other fella used his wife.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I said.
And she was right handy, wasn't she?
Yeah. I think she's getting kind of fed up with that, though. Because I got a barrel in front of the garage up there, you know. And she'd give him some kind of derogatory remark the other day whenever he said something about hand me the trash or something or another. I believe some moss on the ground there, a pile of it. And he was saying something other about putting that wet moss up on the truck, and she said something to him. It wasn't just exactly real nice.
Boy.
I don't know what it was now, but she said something other to him. In other words, he stayed up on top of the truck and housed this stuff, and most of the time she gets down. Now, you take a lot of time on Saturday, their son and daughter-in-law, they go around and help him too.
Oh.
But I'd hate to have my wife down there handing me trash, wouldn't you?
Well,
and they make good money down at that mill. They don't need that job at all. They make good money down there. They're both working.
Oh, they are.
Well, of course they are. And they're working on those machines down there, and I bet you either one of them makes $75 a week.
Well, now.
So they don't need that job.
I have gone along there and watched her sew them barrels and boxes and all up there. She's good.
I know it.
She can get them up there.
But you know it's aging her? That girl's aged 10 years in the last 2 years. That's killing her.
Well,
she just
holding on two jobs.
Well, she used to be a pretty girl a long time ago. And here lately, since she's been doing that, I'm telling you, that's hard work.
Mm-hmm.
Taking a pitchfork and throwing stuff up on top of that old truck.
Pitchfork?
Old wet moss and such. That moss is heavy when it's wet.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, they got a pitchfork on the back of it, and sometimes she little trash on the street, they pick it up, you know, and old limbs falling off those trees.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know that old guy got all kind of machinery down there in his house.
Oh.
I've never been down there, I never have seen him. They tell me he's got lathes down there, presses, all kind of things.
Yeah.
And they take their money and invest it. Now it's possible, I'm not sure, of course I don't know. But he might get out of paying income tax by doing that. He can call it investment.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? He might.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've never thought about it. I don't think he operates in that stuff at that chicken farm. See, they got a chicken farm down there too.
Oh, don't tell me. Don't tell me.
Yeah, man, they sell eggs for income. They furnish all them stores down there with eggs. Man, they had the biggest kind of chicken houses down there. Them things are long as them hit 150-200 feet long.
Well, they won't run themselves. Somebody got to pick up the eggs.
They run them. That's like I say, I never seen a bunch of people like that just work themselves from to death. And then that boy and his wife, they're there too, you know. And they help him also.
They got a job.
Boy, that's a working bunch of people. Yeah, he works for the county. And that other girl stays down there and watches that chicken farm.
Well, where is their headquarters? I don't know where they live.
Right there inside the Ball Diamond down there.
Oh, right there in town.
Mm-hmm. On the edge of town there.
Edge of town.
Yeah, they got a pretty good sized place down there. Like I say, that old chicken house, good gosh, that thing's, it covers a lot of territory.
Yeah, they really build it now.
Yeah, they got several. They got two or three down there back of old Judge Connell down there, you know. In that trailer park. You ever seen those down there?
I saw them. I didn't know whether they're still there or not.
They don't. I don't think they raise any chickens now, but they used to. Whatever. Evans, I think, was doing that, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
But his down there's a whole lot larger than those.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he had one behind the garage there at one time, back of my place. And boy, I'm telling you, you couldn't live around there. That scent would knock you out.
That's strong.
Strong? Strongest thing I've ever seen in my life. Boy, at night, the old wind gets blowing toward my house, you know. And I don't know what kind of a smell you'd call it. Some kind of an ammonia smell.
Yeah.
Boy, I mean, you take your breath, you couldn't breathe. Are you talking about polluted? That was it.
Yeah.
I'm glad you could hardly breathe.
Wouldn't be nothing.
Oh, good gosh. Wouldn't be in the race, though. And they finally made him move it. He had
yeah.
to. Boy, it just
yeah.
got
yeah.
ridiculous there. I'm telling you, you just couldn't stand it.
What did Jimmy tell you about? Huh? He didn't think he'd show up, Buster.
You mean back out there?
Yeah.
Well, he don't trust anybody, you know.
Yeah.
He don't. He has no faith in anyone.
Oh, really?
Not even his own wife. He don't even think she's going to be home when supper time comes. You think you got to run off with some other man. But old Jim don't trust you. Well, a man told me, old Roscoe Davis, that makes me so mad. He comes in and says, this fellow's got battery trouble down there. And says, he wants to get his battery back. I had it on charge, you know.
Yeah.
So I checked his battery, you know, and I said, well, there's nothing wrong with that battery there. You take it out of there. I think that's trouble somewhere else. So he carried that battery down and it wouldn't start. She comes up and says, can you cool down in? I said, I can't right now. I will lift a few minutes. I said, I've got to finish up this job here. He said, well, how long will it be before you can come? I said, it'll be just exactly 15 minutes. I said, he said, okay. I said, y'all just go on back down in. I said, I'll come on down in a few minutes. Whenever you tell somebody that, they think you're pushing them off, you know, getting rid of them for an excuse, you know. I said, go on back down there. Well, I don't want them hanging around there watching me. That makes me nervous, anybody watching me work. I can do a better job if everybody's leaving me alone. So, he said, now, he said, I tell you, sir, this fellow got to go to the doctor. I said, well, I got to go to one, too. He said, are you sure you're going to be down there? And I said, yeah, I said I would. He said, well, I'm going to trust you. That's what old Roscoe said.
Yeah.
So I'm going to trust you now. He says, don't let us down. Just like he's
yeah.
questioning my
yeah.
Sincerity or honesty as to whether I was lying or not, you know. And I said, well, if I said I was going to be down there, I'll be there.
Yeah.
Yes, I'll be there. I said, well, if you believe it, I said, why don't you go on then? you're standing around here with your nose hanging over this here fender. I said, I mean, this hood, first thing that's going to fall down on it and match it. So finally, he backed up and took off. He said, all right, now we're going on down there. I said, go ahead. So when I got down there, he said, I didn't know where you were coming or not. So I was just holding my breath.
Oh, really?
And I said, well, isn't that just too bad? And I said, in other words, you didn't know whether I was coming or not, did you? Well, you know, a lot of people, they don't trust nobody.
Yeah.
My mother's kind of that way a little bit. She used to be that way. She never did trust. She didn't even trust me.
Getting pretty bad.
Yeah, I was getting bad. How did that thing go one day? She asked me something, and I told her, and then she didn't take my word for it. She went up the street and asked somebody else.
Yeah.
She didn't take my word for it at all. I don't forgot what it was now, but anyway, she was kind of that way a little bit, you know. Well, she, I don't know, during her life, I guess she'd met several people that,
yeah,
she just trusted, you know.
Yeah.
She had a reason to do what she was doing, I suppose.
I bet.
Now look,
yeah. Had to.
Let me tell you, Jim's wife, I don't know her, but now you say she's like them. She don't.
She's like him.
Believe.
No.
What'd you say either?
No, she got on that telephone, you know, and cussed that boy of mine out. Don't you remember I told you that?
What was that? Now.
Well, she asked me, she said, are you sure you are coming? I said, well, I'm not real sure. I said, I'm fairly positive I'll be there the next few minutes. The old car stays together. I says, I'll be there. You ain't got to worry about that.
Yeah.
Which, and I did.
Let me see, Buster, how was it?
She's a funny woman, and he's a funny man. But you know, he used to didn't be that way a long time ago. You take a long time ago, he had a brand new Ford convertible.
Yeah.
And he'd come to town and pick up the old boy, you know, and carry him up on Saturday night, and he had the biggest kind of time. And that old Mike, we would run that barber shop up there, you know.
Yeah.
And then old age, I guess, must have did what it did to him. But then he started getting kind of grouchy, you know,
yeah,
and setting his ways, you know, and you couldn't change him. And now he's kind of a pessimistic sort of a person. He don't enjoy life, and he don't have anything to live for or nothing else. Well, I'll tell you one thing that turned, the first thing that ever turned to him was this. His mother and daddy owned that Shell finish station down here that Aaron Miller used to run.
Yeah.
Now they own that, and a whole lot of property back on that side of the road.
Yeah.
And that big home on the right-hand side,
yeah,
he owned that. And a whole lot of land there. And after his daddy died, she remarried, you know. And she married that fellow Bateman. Paul Bateman, see. During the time he was married to her, he let the taxes get delinquent, see. Then he buys up all this stuff in his name and put it in his name.
Oh.
And then whenever she died, Jim didn't have no recourse at all to possess what he rightly owned, see?
Mm.
And that put him out.
Make anybody pretty bitter.
And Jim, sure it will. And that's the first thing that started Jim to being bitter. And old Jim, when he come by there, he wouldn't even look neither way. He'd look straight ahead.
Yeah.
And, because I never thought he was that good. And one day I said, Jim, I said, stop here. No, sir, go on out of the road. Don't stop here. He didn't want to stop there. And I got to thinking about it. Why, you know, he didn't want to stop.
Aaron Miller said he never stopped.
No. Well, naturally, you wouldn't. It'd make anybody kind of feel funny towards something like that, you know. Extra.
Where do they live? In Micanopy?
Now?
Uh-huh.
They live about,
yeah,
2.5 miles outside of town on the Rochelle Road out there.
I see.
Yeah.
They live in that area.
And see, Jim finally had to move out of there completely. Him and his mother live there. Wait a minute. I beg your pardon. A little hidden story. Mr. Bateman died. Jim and his mother live in that house. She still retained the name of Bateman. And his son came along,
yes,
and took over all this stuff. See, his son claimed that it was his daddy's.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And Jim, if he had had the money to carry this to court, he could have got a child's part. But Jim foolishly just hauled off and said, "The hell with it," which he should have never done.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Said, "They're gonna beat me out of most of it. Let them have it all."
Mm-hmm.
Jim should have never said that. He ought to have went to court with it.
Yeah.
And he'd have got a child's part in that thing. Sure he would have. He's an heir. He'd have got a child's part.
But he was brought up sort of spoiled.
Yes, in a way he was. He was the only child.
Yeah, the only child.
And it kind of spoiled him.
He didn't have to face the world.
Not too much.
That time.
At that time. No, because old man Means was a big farmer. He had a lot of land. He raised a lot of potatoes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And old Jim used to peddle them. They called him the Root King. You never did hear him call that, did you?
No.
Called him the Root King.
Yeah.
He used to load that old truck up with sweet potatoes and go all over the whole country.
Yeah.
They made a fortune selling sweet potatoes. The Root King.
Oh.
And he also smoked cigars. They called smoking them roots, you know, what was it, Virginia cheroots?
Yeah.
So they called him the Root King.
Root King.
But they made a lot of money down there, you know. But old Jim now, he's a person that just, whenever you talk to him for a while, you want to get away from him.
Is that right?
Yeah, I've been around a person like that. They, nothing's ever good. Everything's bad. You know, I got a brother that tries to be that way a little bit, and I have to kind of straighten him out once in a while. He tries to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, him and I, we're different altogether, you know.
After a while, it gets on your nerves.
Yeah, it does. He'd come back to the garage, you know, and he'd say, "Who's that old so-and-so going down the street?" And he never said anything good about it. It's always something bad. So what tickled me was here about just before Christmas, we stand up in the door there, you know, and this guy come by in a car. He didn't even know him. He didn't know him from Adam's house cat. And I waved at the guy, you know. He says, "Who's that damn deadbeat?" That's about the funniest thing ever I heard in my darn life. "Who's that damn deadbeat?" Didn't even know the man. Well, now that makes sense. Who's that damn deadbeat?
Yeah.
And he could be half right. You don't know. The man could be a deadbeat for him. I know. I didn't know him too well, you know myself. But that thing tickled me. He didn't even know him, but yet he was naming him, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He was naming him. Great goodness alive.
But
it takes all kinds of people to make a world, don't you know that?
Yes,
sure it does.
You get around over the country, though. Everywhere I go, I sometimes run into you.
Well.
Along the highway and off on that other road out towards the
Well, as I tell you, me and my girlfriend never meet in the same place twice. That's dangerous.
Yeah.
Now, you understand?
Well, I never
see. See, I'll meet her down in Mackinac today.
Off
on tomorrow.
Maybe
we'll be loose the next day, you know what I mean?
You always seem to be moving when I see you, you know.
I know.
You're not sitting anywhere.
No, I'm always going.
Yeah.
That's what my wife tells them.
Yeah. But I always wonder where in the hell has it been this time.
You can't tell. I'm like a flea bite, never in the same place twice. Don't believe in that. I believe in getting around. Going to territory.
But what do you figure has happened in the trouble with a little Ford now?
Nothing. Nothing. Just need somebody who's out of pocket.
God, that's an embarrassing question.
I told you that before, didn't I?
Yeah, well, I've been doing it too.
Yeah, but you don't know how, do you?
Yeah, well,
I'll tell you one thing though. It could be that battery is a little weak. But I tell you
now
one thing.
Don't be nice, Buster.
If you pull that gas down, you ain't gonna never crank that thing up.
No, I keep it right down there with a half an inch.
Just less than that even. It'll be better.
Yeah.
It would.
Don't have no gas on them at all.
Yeah.
And choke that, and you got to keep on choking it to keep that thing running. Just keep on, just once in a while, pull it out until it gets hot, you know.
I understand that.
And if that thing ever goes over a few times and floods,
yeah,
you ain't gonna never crank.
No, that's it.
That's the nature of those tractors.
But the thing about it, he started it the first time. And then he turned it off, and he started it again. And he started it again, and he started it again. And he said, you just got to know how.
Well,
and that's what was in there.
Every old automobile or tractor has got a certain way to crank it.
Yeah.
Just like I tell this young lady a while ago, I bought an old scooter, a Vespa scooter. I run that thing around there for the day that he got it, sold it to me. And after he left, old Terry Brown up there, I went down and cranked my all jumped out. I couldn't start that thing. I done everything in the world to it to get it to go. I want to go for a ride. I've been trying to crank that thing ever since. The other day, he come by there, the day he's off, he works up at the inspection station for the state road, you know.
Yeah.
I said, Terry, I said, we're about to pull that thing off. I said, you know how to put it in gear and pull it off? I said, yeah. He said, I'm going to crank it. I said, you ain't going to crank that thing. I said, I've been cranking on it for a month, and I have too. Every 3 or 4 days, I'll go down and I'll crank till my leg nearly jumps out of socket. Trying to get that thing started. It ain't hit the first lick. He went in there and he kept fooling that thing, you know, and messing with everything, you know, and after a while that thing just cranked right up. No trouble at all. Took it out and drove the thing around a bit and come back and parked it. Well, he knows, I don't know what he's doing, but he knew just exactly where to put that throttle.
Mm-hmm.
And if I ain't mistaken, I think he turned that thing on all the way. I know he did. And all that's here is just the opposite. You don't want to put no gas in that tractor at all. If you do, it'll just cut right off.
Yeah.
And then you got trouble, sure enough. Then.
Of course, we had just taken the battery charger off of it.
Well, now that helped it.
Yeah.
Probably.
That does.
It does.
You know, up the country, I used to, on a cold day, I used to pour a little water, hot water, on the manifold.
Man, don't do that. You'll bust that thing wide open. I know a man pulled hot water on the engine and cracked the block.
Buster, and somehow or other, it just started right out. The other people did it right there.
Yeah. Well, the manifold's fairly thick. But you pour hot water on the block, it'll bust it wide open, you know it?
Yeah.
Just like pouring cold water into a hot block. Same thing, you know.
Yeah.
But you pour it in there, it sure bust it.
But you think that carburetor needs a little hose to it, and you think, there's a little bolt that we need on there.
Got to have a nut on that old generator. Because I noticed that wire on that generator was kind of loose, and that ain't keeping that battery charged up. Because whenever I moved that thing a while ago, I noticed that needle jumped up about, I think about 2 amps. It jumped up.
You probably have a bolt that size. The bus said he had one if you didn't, so you can look for it.
So nothing goes on that old generator where the poles come out.
Well, let's check it before you go.
Okay.
Oh, yes, I'd appreciate that. I'd love to.
Well, I'm the one that will appreciate it if that thing will start.
Okay.
Because I never do it just right. And I get told about it.
Oh, she means when she gets on. She rides it, and I pull her, you see.
And if it don't start up, you fuss at her, like I do my wife.
Yeah.
And make it cold, and I may be sleepy, or I may be tired, and I may not, you know, not want to do it right.
Yeah.
And I just have 2 hands.
It's hard to do.
I always forget, you know, that I, you know.
Yeah.
Some people have mechanical minds and some people don't.
Some people can pull it open or something.
Some can't.
I want to reach over there after it's stalled.
Mm. Well,
so you see who's really interested in whether
the
tractor starts.
I know what you mean. Starts. I know. I have quite a bit of trouble getting people to satisfy me whenever I'm trying to pull them.
Yeah.
Now, I do. I don't know kidding about that thing.
I appreciate that, Susan. And I tell you, whenever you work with that tractor, just think that you're doing something to help me.
I cussed that old nigga out good the other day in Gainesville. The one I was pulling.
Yeah.
The one that picked Jim Means up.
Yeah.
Well, he's doing just what I told him not to. But I should expect everybody to be perfect. I know every time my wife pulled me off, I think she'd have jerking and snatching too much, and I'm hooping and hollering out of, you know. But anyway, I told him right there in Gainesville, at the big place, when we started out, I was going to pull that old car back. I said, whenever you see too much light getting in that chain. I said, put on them brakes just a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, we started off and he was just laying on them. Boy, I mean, he was just stomping them. I stopped and I said, listen. I said, I didn't tell you to put both feet on the darn things and hold them where I can't even pull you. I said, when we're approaching a street light, to just ease your brakes on gently so that you'll keep slack out of the chain. And over here, he's not what you call real bright anyway, you know. And he's the one that works them little garden up there. And making up, you know, around those flower beds and all that stuff for the city. Kind of a flat nosed nigga. You seen him, haven't you? And so then I told him that, then he act like he's scared to put him on at all. And we got down there this side of the fire station, right there on Main Street, and there's a car up ahead of me, and I slowed up just a little bit, and when they did, he started running up on me. We got a whole lot of slack in that chain. And his wheel got up on top of that chain. There was that much slack in it. And that wheel got on top of that chain. It started skidding. And of all the noise ever you heard in your life, it left a mark as far as near that fence over yonder. One old cop had to come along and said something to them. Man, that old tire was squalling, the chain was scraping.
I'll tell you something. When you're on the back end and somebody's pulling you, it doesn't always do the way you think it does.
No, not the way that they want it to do. The one that's in the other vehicle. Does it?
And I have a great feeling for somebody who doesn't know when the chain needs to be slacked.
Yeah. Well, he could see it, but like I say, he's probably not used to being pulled, you know.
No.
And he could keep that slack out. But you've got to have experience with such as that, you know.
Yeah, you have.
I know my brother jerked a whole bumper off of my old car here about 10 years ago. I had him pulling me.
Yeah.
He says, is that enough? I said, that's enough. Right there, you've done enough. Just let it sit right where it is. I'll get somebody else to finish jerking the other side of the damn thing off. Got to go home. So he did. He did. I don't know why he did it, but when we started down in that little old slope, still to him realizing that there was going to be some chain slack there, which it will too when you go down in a little old ditch, you know. See, mine kind of rough on his. And he just gave it the gun. It jerked a whole bumper off of one side of old car, Chevrolet. And he thought I was cranked up. I would be cranked up. He said, "Have I done enough?" I said, "You've done plenty."
I thought was a genius. I didn't know. I thought he could do anything.
Well, he can. He did. He did that. Nobody else couldn't do it. Okay, couldn't jerk it off as good as he did. Well, it was an accident. But right there in the front of the house,
yeah.
That little old gully. He wasn't paying no attention.
Yeah.
That's what it was. He wasn't paying no attention. And that thing went up there.
Yeah.
Then he thought it didn't have no slack in it. He was giving it a gun right on.
Yeah.
And boy, it caught that slack. And he just pulled that bumper clean off.
Yeah.
Sure did.
That was rejected.
It did.
Turn my hat. I want to go out there and see what we need on that.
Yeah. All right.
I appreciate the juice. That was 100%.
I made
that.
That's
plenty.
How about that?
That's plenty.
You?
That's 100%
that
juice.
That was fun to hear
if
about.
If he didn't have such a big family, I'd let him take that home. That was
that
didn't hurt at all.
We got some. I had some out of my room, my wife.
Lord,
she's
got
a.
I brought you something, a whole bag in my kitchen that we picked before it. You know, we have horseshoes all over our yard.
Oh, really?
I thought some of them were no good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we've got to be careful.
I picked.